Ladies and gentlemen, it's Thursday. Football Scoop Podcast is back. Thursdays, we talk about games coming up. Typically, the weekend would just be getting started Thursday night. We actually had football last night. Missouri State handled business, went to Middle Tennessee and beat Middle Tennessee. I hate to say it, just like all four of us predicted they would. Middle is just
not good.
Not great. I don't know if you guys happened to catch the end of the Liberty UTEP game. Heck of a fourth and one, grown man tackle, one-on-one. Running back just takes on this linebacker. Linebacker just grabbed him, mauled him, and threw him on the ground for a loss. Liberty wins the game. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm a former linebacker like myself.
Now, was that on Tecmo Bowl or was that NFL Blitz?
Yeah, that reminds me. We were promised some film of you playing first base that is yet to be delivered. Now I want to see some linebacker film as well.
This all exists. All right. We can make this happen. Not on today's show, but we can make this happen.
This is the Pachyderm podcast. We don't forget. we don't forget. So I did see that. I saw the end of both of those games. Of note, MTSU. And I tweeted this out a few weeks ago. You never freaking stop playing for a touchdown in college football, in my opinion, ever. But especially, you cannot treat being at the 30-yard line like you're in chip shot range. And that's what MTSU did. That was an affront to conservative to call that conservative. Like, it couldn't be any more worse than conservative. And then the thing that stood out to me about Liberty UTEP is – I didn't think either of those teams was particularly good. And for UTEP to supposed to be an offensive-minded program, the Miners had less than 75 yards total offense as the fourth quarter started at home.
Not great, Bob. Turn the page to Thursday night. Tulane's hosting East Carolina. Tulane's a good football team. They're not, in my opinion. Well, we'll see. I think Tulane's been really good in some other years. I'm not sure this team is that deep. Be interesting to see. East Carolina's got some fight in them. They got that dog. So that one I think is going to be a battle. How about Southern Miss? I think they're playing for their fourth win. I don't think Southern Miss – I think they had one win last year. I think they might have two or three the year before. Charles Huff comes in and turns that thing around. Georgia Southern's not playing great. I mean, Southern Miss is favored at in Statesboro. Pretty interesting one there.
It is an interesting one there because it's been a last year was just a so-so season for Clay Helton down in Statesboro, and this year has gotten off to a disastrous start for Georgia State. And it's not just been losses. Okay. They've had a couple of really gnarly, ugly blowout losses. So that one is one I'll be monitoring. Kennesaw State, also another program that was pretty dreadful a year ago that's playing well under first-time FBS head coach Jerry Mack. They get La Tech at home. That's a low-key good game. There's no marquee games tonight, but there's a bunch of compelling good games tonight.
Marquee games Friday night. South Florida at North Texas in Denton. Zach Barnett will be covering the game in Denton. Tell me about that one, Zach.
So this is this game's a sellout. There are growing up in Denton. I think that I can recall three times when they've filled or nearly filled the home stadium, and that's 2003. They played Baylor at home and beat the crap out of them before Baylor got good, and then it was 2018 when they had it rolling under Seth Luttrell. Mm-hmm. They just played for the conference championship the year prior. Lost to Louisiana Tech. I think it was a missed field goal that would have sent the game in overtime. Never really got it back together and never got the juice together the way they had it after that loss. It was kind of a long, slow decline after that loss. Now, I mean, everything that you could possibly want for a North Texas football team is out in front of you. And you've come a long way in a short amount of time. I've talked about what Skylar Cassidy's done to that defense. Drew Mestemaker, their quarterback's one of the best. But one of the best stories in college football. So you have the opportunity to do something that you haven't done in decades, really. And the first goal of what you've done is capture your own fan base is there. So I'm really excited to be there and capture the moment of what could be, you know, one of the high points of North Texas football history.
North Texas is undefeated. South Florida, you know, had the big win early in the season. They're 4-1. If North Texas were to put it on South Florida, eyeballs are open to what Eric Morse is doing, you know, nationally. South Florida is good, though. I think this one's a battle. I actually see South Florida finding a way, but I don't know that I don't know that everybody agrees with me.
Ooh. Vegas has this one of the highest scoring games. The over-under is at 66.5, and I think the other game that is higher than that is FAU-UAB, and that might just be FAU expected to score a bazillion. So I see this one being an absolute shootout. And, you know, Skylar Cassidy, I think, has come in, and that defense has allowed 20 points a game, but I think this is a high-scoring 30 in the 30s or 40s for both teams.
Yeah, Byron Brown for South Florida. Yes, that's exactly the word I was going to use. And if they win, I think it's a put-the-team-on-your-back type performance from him.
Agreed. Rutgers goes cross-country to Washington. It's a football game. Fresno State's at Colorado State. I think Fresno has some stud athletes. Their backfield has the potential to get loose. Colorado State's secondary is not very good at all. I can see Fresno ripping off some long runs and then it being a tough night.
Fresno State's not getting enough attention.
Fort Collins.
Yeah, Fresno State's not getting enough attention under Entz to be 5-1. I mean, you have a chance to clinch bowl eligibility under a first-year coach before the second Saturday of October. That's a remarkable step forward for that program.
Amen. All right, turn the page to Saturday. Saturday is loaded, like phenomenal, awesome. I could start anywhere. I'll start at the top. Ohio State's at Illinois. I think Ohio State's a phenomenally well put together football team. Illinois, I think, is going to battle them, but I think Ohio State just flexes enough muscles and wins by 10 or 14.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate out there of who's the best team in college football. I'm going to continue to say it's Ohio State until it's not, because I have a high degree of confidence they could beat you 10-7 and they could beat you 41-38. I'm talking legit teams. And the good news for I also struggle to imagine anyone getting to 38 against this Ohio State defense. The numbers they're putting together, we could look back and say, you know, put this defense up against the greats, and to the point where we might not even know the full capability of Ohio State's offense, because they never even have to shift it into fifth gear, really.
Yeah, the one bugaboo that's been percolating about the Buckeyes this week is their short yardage offense. It has been less than ideal, and a lot of clamoring for more Bo Jackson, not Tecmo Bo, Scott, but more Bo Jackson and more of the backfield being showcased in short yardage runs. But this is a moment where Matt Patricia, look at the Belichick tree, and it's burning to its embers in Chapel Hill, but Matt Patricia, the former Belichick DC, is making his foray into college football seamlessly beautiful, while the guy he replaced is also part of a mattress fire in Happy Valley.
Matt Patricia's defense, I think, will be the most studied offense or most studied thing at this offseason by coaches across the country. There's a lot of talk about how it morphs and is unrecognizable from week to week, to the point that people don't understand how he's carrying it over week to week and making it teachable to players. And as good as they've been in the red zone, I believe they still have not allowed a touchdown in the red zone, or they've only allowed one. That's outstanding. And I heard Ryan Day talk this week about, as they were studying Illinois, and he gave a lot of credit to Brett Bielema and being one of the best coaches in the Big Ten, was that the Ohio State staff is not taking into account the Indiana game. They felt like that was a complete outlier, so they're throwing that one away and focusing on the other games, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, Doug, opposing offenses are 0-8 in the red zone against Ohio State in getting touchdowns. Ohio State's given up 2 touchdowns in 5 games. That's not a whole lot you need to say beyond that, really.
Staying in the 11 a.m. early window, Alabama's at Missouri. I think this is back and forth. I think Missouri is a good football team. I lean Alabama on this one. I feel like they kind of finally got their feet under them.
The over-under in that one is 51.5, and I, at first blush, I don't mess with over-unders, but if I did, I think I would take the over in this one. I think, like you, that there's going to be some offense from both sides. I just think that over the course of four quarters, Alabama and the Black Hoodie of Death will pull away for the victory, since we are now monitoring what Kalen DeBoer wears on the sidelines and correlating it to Alabama's win-loss percentage. But this is an interesting game. How often do we see an SEC team that's undefeated, ranked in the top 15, and at home as an underdog to a one-loss SEC team coming in? Like, on the surface, you're not at all surprised that Missouri is a slight underdog to Alabama. But it's also an undefeated Missouri team. Of course, Missouri still hasn't had to leave the state to play a game, so that's a big, big part of that. We're going to learn a lot more about Missouri beginning tomorrow and for the next 7 weeks.
Yeah, Alabama is 5-0 against Missouri since they joined the SEC. They've won those games by a combined 195-52, including 34-0 last season. But last season, Missouri did not have Ahmad Hardy, who in a wide open season, if he goes out and has a good game and a Missouri win, could be a this week's Heisman Trophy winner. I think he's garnered consistency as the best running back in college football, could garner buzz as the best player in college football. Missouri runs for nearly 300 yards a game. I fully don't expect them to get to 300 against Alabama, but I think they got to be at least 200 to have a chance to win this game. Because like you, John, I don't see Missouri really slowing down Alabama's offense. You've got to outscore them.
I'm going to throw a weird one at you guys. Michigan State has lost their last two games at USC and at Nebraska. Modestly in those games. Michigan State was in those games. They are like an 8-point favorite over UCLA. How does Penn State take that? It's just nothing we can say about that one.
No, I wanted to hear from Doug on this one, because he usually has a great pulse of things at Michigan State. And we know there's been controversy in the Twitter sphere and otherwise this week with the Michigan State players sort of being done with the fan base. Doug, what are your thoughts there as our resident Michigan State man?
Quarterback Aiden Childs asked about how he feels about the fan base being restless, and his response was, "I don't care about the fans anymore." Like, that is not something that fans want to hear from their starting quarterback. But you can, with that response, you can feel the frustrations reaching a boiling point in East Lansing. The offense is really inept. Special teams miscues against Nebraska. They are just really still searching for an identity in a time where that should be established, and that frustration has certainly reached a boiling point.
Yeah, especially since Childs is not this is not his first college football season or anything, or it's not like he hasn't been extended time with Jonathan Smith. That's what's surprising to me.
Before we jump to the 2:30 window, which is amazing, you know, they say it's everybody's Super Bowl, getting to play, go to the Grove and play at Ole Miss. Washington State coming across country, trying to knock Lane off his perch, undefeated.
Not a chance.
No. Moving right along. Okay, now it's the good stuff. OU, Texas, Zach Barnett going to be there. How do we feel, buddy?
Oh, man. So I think you got to start, anytime you analyze this game, you got to start with going back to, I have the number since 2000, the team that outrushes, that wins the rushing battle is 24-2 in this game. And if you go back to like 1990, 1989, I think it's like 34-2, 34-3, something like that. Typical numbers in the FBS is like 80. This game's over 90. So who's going to win the rushing battle? Well, Oklahoma going into last week was 67th of 68. In terms of rushing yards per game from its running backs. Texas has three guys that I think are tailor-made to spy either Mateer or Hawkins, and Anthony Hill, Colin Simmons, and Trey Moore. So if I'm Pete Kwiatkowski, I'm looking to contain the quarterback run game with one of those three guys, and ideally it's a different guy every play. You trust your secondary to shut the passing game down. You trust the rest of the front to shut the run game down. Then you go score enough points to win the game. Texas has Arch Manning is their leading rusher so far with 166 yards. They have four running backs with between like 90 and 150 yards per game last week or per season on the entire season. Last week, Trey Weiser was their leading rusher among running backs, 8 carries, 11 yards. So I joked that Brent Venables would spend 3 weeks devising a game plan so diabolical it could get him arrested. But now I don't even think you need to do that. I think if you run your vanilla, your basic stuff for Oklahoma, you're going to shut Texas down. They want to throw it over the top, put three safeties back, force them to do something they're not comfortable doing, and they'll give you the football back. So long story longer, it's really tough for me to see Texas winning this game considering the mismatch between Oklahoma's defensive tackles and the interior of Texas' offensive line. I think that's the game right there, and I think Oklahoma wins it.
JB, what do you think?
For a long time, worried that Texas would be looking ahead to Kentucky contests, but I no longer feel that way. I'm really wrestling with this one on our scoop picks this week just because this is a tighten the ranks, close the ranks, combat quarters type moment for Texas. Can Texas plant its flag on this season, or is Texas's season over before the 15th mm-hmm. of October? I mean, is Texas season going to end when we're still 2.5 weeks, almost 3 weeks from Halloween? That's almost unfathomable to me. But then I thought Texas would show me a lot more last week in the swamp. And that Texas is struggling some isn't a surprise, given all the NFL talent that they lost. And that's indisputable. I mean, there's Texas dudes from last year's team littered all over the NFL. But it's how disjointed the Longhorns are on offense that is most surprising to me. And they're hard to watch. I mean, we've talked about some of the worst offensive teams you can imagine already in this podcast, and we're just 17 minutes in, and Texas is in that category with those other teams that we talked about earlier. It's just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Arch holding on to the football. I think his head coach has not put him in the best situations to succeed. I think you're continuing to see what Sark thought his offense would be on the whiteboard on August 1st and what they actually are on the field here in October. And you saw last week Arch taking sacks. It's like, why is he holding on to the football? Well, you're going max protect, keeping two tight ends in, and he's waiting for routes to develop down the field that are covered. Florida wasn't even sending numbers and still getting to the quarterback because your center and guard combination is so terrible. You could have 14 tight ends on the field, it wouldn't have mattered because you're not blocking anyone on the interior. Florida doubled its entire season output of pressures in one afternoon against Texas. That's how poor the offensive line played. And to think that they're going to turn this around in 6 days, I have a hard time seeing that.
Anything can happen in a rivalry game, right? I like Oklahoma in this one based on the matchups up front and Texas's struggles. But I mean, guys, if Texas drops this one, they've still got, I mean, you've got Kentucky and Mississippi State coming up, but you've also got a ranked Vanderbilt squad, Georgia top 10, Texas A&M top 5 still on the schedule. We're talking about the Longhorns battling for bowl eligibility if they drop this one. And that's a wild concept to talk mm-hmm. about.
And yeah. The flip side of it is, sorry, John, but if they win, Sark will be the first Texas coach to be over 500 against Oklahoma since 2001. They'd have their first back-to-back wins over Oklahoma since 2008-09. And then I'm not saying this is going to happen, but you'll be leaving the fairgrounds thinking, well, we got Kentucky, we got Mississippi State, we got Vanderbilt at home, we got a bye week. We build on this, and all of a sudden it's November 15th. We're between the hedges. Mm-hmm. We're back in the top 10. We're in the thick of this thing, baby.
Yeah, that's it. It's that's it. You're either your season is still alive in a little more than 24 hours from now, or 48 hours from now, or your season is when does spring camp start? Because a bowl would be meaningless with where you began. I was just going to point out, I can't take credit for this stat. I saw it probably on the platform like Prince, formerly known as X. And that is, I think through 60 games, Steve Sarkisian is like 41-19, and Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M was like 39-21. Like, Jimbo Fisher's won a natty, but right now that's not the comparison you want if you're Steve Sarkisian.
Nope. I like the horns. Okay, what I think could be the game of the day, Indiana goes to Eugene. Indiana at Oregon. How do we see it playing out? Doug, give me some quick thoughts there.
I firmly believe Oregon's one of the top teams in the country. I think they're right in there in the conversation with Ohio State. Ohio State's obviously been really strong defensively, but Oregon to me seems like a more complete, scary team in all three phases. Offensively, they're a bit stronger. Defensively, they're not as strong. I don't think anyone's in that conversation with what Matt Patricia has done with the Ohio State defense. But I feel like you can never count out a Kurt Cignetti team. They're going to come in with swagger. They've got to go to Autzen. This is, if I had to like circle one, and I know the SEC matchup, Alabama-Missouri gets a lot of attention. If I had to circle one and I could only watch one college football game this weekend, which would never happen, this is my game, the Hoosiers and the Ducks. I think Mike Shanahan at Indiana has done a remarkable job. He was in my honorable mention list as far as coordinators that are underappreciated after losing a star quarterback, losing your co-offensive coordinator. They have been equally as impressive on offense this year as they were last year, and that was none more obvious than the Illinois blowout. I mean, they Kurt Cignetti always has his teams ready to play. I root for the Hoosiers in this one just because I want them to be able to go into the college football playoff and say, hey, you thought we didn't play anyone this year? Well, we just beat one of the top teams in the country, so rank us accordingly. So I'll be rooting for the Hoosiers in this one, but I think Oregon is just too loaded from a coaching talent standpoint. I love the way Dan Lanning motivates his guys through storytelling and kind of controlling the narrative a little bit and putting thoughts in their head. There's no one better in the country than the Oregon staff at doing that kind of stuff. So it's a real matchup of approaches, of very interesting approaches from head coaches and their coordinators.
That's the same Indiana team, though, that should have lost a couple of weeks ago at Iowa, that was in a dogfight, and Iowa picks them off and is lined up to kick a go-ahead field goal with like 150 left in the game, and the kicker had already made one from further distance, like from 52 yards, and missed a 42-yarder or something like that. And then, nonetheless, Iowa has Indiana in third and impossible, it seems, and at worst case is going to be headed to overtime at home against the Hoosiers, and instead gives up a 51-yard or 49-yard touchdown on 3rd-and-13 to lose the game in heartbreaking fashion. So you credit Indiana for having the resolve to win that game. Indiana's not winning this game in Autzen Stadium, and the line is 7.5, and I'm hammering the home team and that line all day long.
Well, John, Iowa's a playoff team.
I've heard that. And they're not eliminated yet. They're no further from the playoffs than your Texas Longhorns.
So obviously we're in a year where the guys we thought were going to be the guys at quarterback have not been that. So one of the names that stepped up is Fernando Mendoza, who's the nation's most efficient passer. And you go back to their Indiana's losses to Ohio State and Notre Dame last season. They felt like player to player, athlete to athlete, down and down, they matched up. They just didn't get the breaks, didn't make their own breaks, yada, yada, yada. Well, part of that is you had a quarterback that was just a good college quarterback. Now you have a guy that could be a top pick in the draft. Like, this could be a battle of the two first quarterbacks off the board come April. So if Indiana has a snowball's chance in hell to win this game, then Mendoza needs to play like a top five draft pick.
Here's the only other thing I would say about this game. Unlike some of his Big Ten conference brethren in the head coaching ranks, I guarantee you Kurt Cignetti is not going to say a word about flying cross country.
I think this one's going to be a great game. All right. quick hitters. Give me less than a minute. TCU at K-State. Zach, what you think?
I think this is K-State got a controversial close win at Baylor. TCU pulled out a win over Colorado at home last week that was not really as close as the 14-point final margin. I think it'll be 6 points in either direction, but I pick K-State to win simply because they're at home with a 1.3 level degree of confidence.
Maryland started off really hot this year. They absolutely collapsed against Washington at home in Maryland last week. Washington came back to the fourth quarter and got them. Nebraska comes into town. Can Nebraska big boy Maryland?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, Mike Loxley's record after September and before is like 21-1, and afterwards it's like the reverse. I still have a low degree of confidence in Nebraska actually being able to handle their business in a Big Ten road game. I think this will be a 5-point game. It probably should be a 21-point Nebraska win, but I bet you they probably win it by 4 or 5.
I think most of America would agree with you. Air Force played better than I think a lot of people thought versus Navy. Here they're at UNLV. UNLV is undefeated. Can Air Force kind of come into a little different ball game and catch UNLV?
UNLV is not indomitable at all.
I agree.
And Air Force is playing really good offensively. They're just uncharacteristically porous on defense. And unfortunately for the Falcons, it's continuing a streak that started last year. Now, last year there were a bunch of injuries, but after starting 2023, like 8-0, Air Force's record since then is markedly below 500, and it's ugly, and it's unfortunate because, just being candid here, Troy Calhoun is one of my favorite people anywhere in college football. I love that dude, and it's just personally tough to see them struggling like this. So are they capable? Yes. Do I expect them to? No.
I think Dan Mullen has a challenge on his hands to avoid a letdown. They're at Boise next week. UNLV is if you're UNLV and you're going to Boise undefeated, that's about as much as you could ever hope for as a program. So yep. You got to get there and get over this one first.
All right, we're still in the 2:30 window, and I got a bazillion more games. We got to keep rocking. Arkansas, Bobby Petrino coming to Neyland. JB.
56-21, Vols. Moving on.
Moving on. Florida is at A&M. Can Florida find some more magic and disrupt another season?
Why not? I mean, you finally realize that you have – I mean, Jaden Baugh might be the best running back in the SEC outside of Ahmad Hardy. And for all the – everything DJ Lagway did last week and throwing the ball to Dallas Wilson certainly helped. If you make him the centerpiece of your offense and you stay out of 3rd and 9, which seems like every time I flip on an A&M game, they have an opponent in 3rd and 9, then yeah, you have a chance to win. The A&M offense is probably underperformed a little bit, I think it's safe to say, against Auburn and Mississippi State. So yeah, you have there's no reason you can't go win this game.
Yeah, Florida's defense can keep this contest close. I just think ultimately that Elko's defense will be the difference, and Elko's defense and home field will be the difference in this contest. But
Elko's defense, the Aggie Yell leaders, I think pushed this to a 14-point game. I'm spreading the Vegas line, almost doubling it. I think the Aggies roll because Florida, they found some treasure last week. That won't continue into this week against Mike Elko's defense.
Sounds to me like Doug wants to be an honorary Aggie Yell leader.
Yell leader. Yell leader giving them points was something. Usually that's a takeaway, but okay. Iowa is at Wisconsin in a game that might set offense back a few years. They're not going to film this one. This one, they might just burn the tapes immediately.
Over or under 2 punts past the 50-yard line. Like
oh, 100% like, over. Ooh. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, 2. That's a good 2 question.
Yeah, if it was 1.5, I'd feel great. 2.
I bet the punt over under. I bet the punt over under is similar to the point over under.
That's rude and awesome. Okay, Georgia is at Auburn. Auburn's had this game circled for a long time. I honestly think Auburn is going to give them a hell of a fight. My heart tells me that that Georgia's got a little bit too much and will put them away. But, boy, I can see Auburn fighting in this one.
Auburn fought in this game very valiantly last year, if I'm not mistaken. Like, wasn't this a really good game between the hedges last year?
Yeah.
That Auburn had a lead in it for a while. So I would expect nothing less because, look, it's not similar situations in the big picture because this game is inherently more important for his tenure. But much like I talked about Steve Sarkisian and Texas having a circle the wagons, tighten the ranks type moment, this is that for Auburn. It's now or never for Auburn. And I mean that. Like this, there could not be more critical mass involved for Hugh Freeze than this contest.
Amen. Michigan goes to USC. Different style. Very different styles. I can see this game going either way.
It's tough. I'm with you, but at the same time, it's tough for me to imagine a Lincoln Riley team out-toughing a tough physical Big Ten team until I see them do it. Can Maiava go off and they win 34-31? Sure they can. But Michigan's got a great running back in Justice Hayes. They've got an identity. And I think that'll be enough. And USC will submit at some point in the fourth quarter. Michigan will win.
Wasn't this a real ugly USC win a year ago? I can't remember. Did Michigan win this late on fourth and goal?
I think Michigan won it late. Ugly was correct, but I think Michigan won it late.
Yeah, so if this is 20-17 again, then it's Michigan all day long. And by the way, then USC comes to South Bend next week for a primetime tussle with Notre Dame. So once again, we're talking seasons on the brink that could be over before Halloween. And USC, if it doesn't win this game, is right there in the same boat as Notre Dame has been in since week two, that Texas is presently in, that all these other Georgia is presently in, all these teams we've talked about are sitting here on the brink, and we're not even to October 15th. So the magnitude of this game is absolutely huge for Lincoln Riley and USC in the present tense and in the big picture. It's a huge, huge game for the state of affairs for USC football.
Michigan won last year. Michigan won 27-24 in the Big House last year.
That's right. Go ahead, Doug. What were you saying?
I mean, they lost a tight one to Illinois last week. They've got Michigan, then Notre Dame, and then that second to last week of the season, they face off against Oregon. So if they can find a way to win these next two, you could see them beating Nebraska, Northwestern, Iowa. Sure, sets up a huge Big Ten matchup between Oregon and USC, and that felt really disgusting coming out of my mouth. Oregon and USC in the Big Ten. Still not easy.
Family podcast, no comment.
Coming to the SEC, South Carolina's coming to Baton Rouge. Don't know about this game. I really don't. You would think LSU has enough to win by 10. You would think. I don't know.
Can LSU score 10?
Yeah.
Again, you would think.
13-10, but Tigers.
That low? Nah, I get more points than that.
Yeah, I think 13-10 is probably your halftime score. I think it'll be.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think it'll be a good type of ugly, like an entertaining type of ugly game. But I'd lean LSU.
I'd say 26-18, something like that, something weird.
Are you going, Scott?
I have a great opportunity to go. I'm thinking about it. I've been going to a bunch of games and when you go to those games, you go into a black hole and you don't see anything else. And there's some kind of amazing, awesome other stuff going on at the same time. So I'm up in the air. We'll see. BYU at Arizona. I think one collective loss, two collective losses, one.
Yes.
Arizona lost one. I think BYU's undefeated, right?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this and the Big 12 in general. Huge weekend for the Big 12 because you have BYU at Arizona, BYU 5-0, Arizona 4-1. I believe that matches Arizona's win total from a year ago. A win here at home would put the Wildcats in the top 25 and probably knock out undefeated BYU from the top 25. And then you have Arizona State at Utah this weekend. Mm-hmm. Huge, because if BYU can win on the road and Utah can take care of business at home against Arizona State, and that's not a given, but I'm just talking about the state of the Big 12, then you would set up keeping BYU undefeated, Utah one loss, and the Holy War is next week. Meanwhile, Texas Tech has Kansas this weekend. If it takes care of business, it hosts Arizona State next weekend. Then you're talking about potentially having ESPN game day, maybe in Salt Lake City for the Holy War, and Big Noon kickoff in Lubbock for Texas Tech, Arizona State. So the Big 12's moment in the sun, so to speak, is coming over the next 8 days. What happens this weekend can set up a potentially massive weekend for the Big 12 next Saturday. So I would watch these games anyway. I love watching BYU football, like, especially because they're so often on at 10 o'clock, whether it's Friday night or Saturday night, and that just warms my soul. Or that or the bourbon. But anyway, I can't wait for these games this weekend. Like, I'm really geeked up for this BYU-Arizona game because it's so important for both teams. And Arizona believes very strongly that they're by far the best team that BYU has faced so far. So is BYU at 5-0 for real with the freshman Bear Bachmeyer? Mm-hmm. There's no tougher quarterback in college football. And as somebody told me this week, the great thing about Bear is he doesn't know what he doesn't know. So he thinks he's pretty damn good. And we're going to see.
So two things real quick. I shouted out Danny Gonzalez on our podcast on Tuesday, Arizona's new defensive coordinator. Arizona may very well be the best team that BYU's faced. BYU is definitely the best team that Arizona will have faced so far this season. Two, so you mentioned next week and the possibility of getting Big Noon for Tech Arizona State next week. That game's in Tempe, and it's already been set for a 3 p.m. Central Time kick, so it's not going to be Big Noon. And I think it's such an interesting dichotomy because I guarantee you the people in the Big 12 offices were disappointed as they continue to be treated like the stepchild in that relationship compared to the Big 10. But I bet you at the same time, everyone in Arizona State is like, phew, we don't, our biggest home game in a long time is not going to be at 10 a.m. local time. Thank the good Lord, we'll have some time to prepare for that one. It would be an early afternoon kick instead of late morning.
Does anybody have any idea what the ratings are between College Game Day and the Big Noon thing?
I know Game Day has had the Corso finale was the most viewed Game Day ever, but then a couple of subsequent ones have also been record setters for that place on the calendar for ESPN. But I also know from speaking with people in the Big Ten and the Big 12 that, and I'll keep my personal feelings aside here, but the Portnoy effect at Big Noon kickoff is apparently a real thing, and the numbers are up according to folks at both the Big 12 and the Big 10. So they're believing in the Portnoy effect, the Portnoy impact on ratings.
Interesting. All right. Any other games y'all want to touch on before we shut this dog down?
I think we hit just about all of them. I think we touched on darn near every game worth mentioning.
That was nice. That was burn the tape. All right, Football Scoop Podcast. We love doing this. Great ball games, even starting tonight and Friday night, Saturday, all day Saturday. Let's reconvene Sunday. I'll be off. These guys will be on. Shall we?
One FCS game, Idaho State at Montana State. Noteworthy only because my brother is in Bozeman this week, so shout out Thomas Bryce because he is going to see the Montana State-Idaho State game, and he is remarkably fired up.
God bless this great country. All right, we're out.